Coming up on The Gist of It, Bryant Gumbel. Is he racist or just idiotic? Occupy Toronto. I hear you, I just don't know what you're saying. The unwealthy barber. He wants more for an antique hockey stick he sold for $1,000. Should he get it? And the great Earl McRae. Please tell me he's actually living in Tweed with Elvis. Don Cherry backtracking. Tim Connolly's noggin. Phil Kessel's hot start. Aaron Asham's brain cramp. Shia LaBeouf is trendy. All coming up. Hackers turned Sesame Street's YouTube channel into a porn site over the weekend. Fondle me, Elmo?
Politics, sports, entertainment, pop culture. It's all fair game here. Somewhere in the city of Toronto, two brains are about to collide. What will remain is the gist of it. Here now are Don Landry and Bill Hayes. Bombs away, boys.
If you're an NBA fan, you may be feeling optimistic about the fact that owners and players met for 16 hours yesterday and are meeting again as we record this. It's Wednesday. That's encouraging. But there is a troubling undertone going on that was voiced by Bryant Gumbel yesterday on his HBO show, Real Sports. He called for NBA Commissioner David Stern to stop behaving like a, quote, plantation overseer. Now look, I'm not a black man, I've never experienced racism, and I can only imagine the humiliation. But this does seem to cheapen the race issue. I mean, we're talking about multimillionaires here. It's not people that are back in the 1840s on a plantation. And David Stern, like every sports commissioner, runs a business. And this is all about business.
Bryant Gumbel disappoints again. This guy has really rubbed me the wrong way for a long time. And it's not the first time he said something idiotic when it comes to race.
And won't be the last.
And it won't be the last. Well, should it be? And is there a double standard here? Flip it. And when a white guy says something that can be conceived as racist... there are calls for him to be fired, calls for him to step down, at least apologize. And then even after the apologies, quite often it's not enough. And you're gone.
Yeah.
Say what you will about Rush Limbaugh. He said some idiotic comments and he was let go.
Mm-hmm.
Say what you will about Hank Williams. He said some idiotic comments and he was let go. How many times can Bryant Gumbel get away with saying completely idiotic comments? Those with racial under and overtones. To what extent, I don't know. I don't know the man personally. Is he a racist? Well, sometimes I wonder. Clearly, sometimes I wonder if he is not a guy who just dislikes white people.
Well, here's the thing. I can understand if you have been somehow held back in your job, in your career, because of the color of your skin. No question that's happened an awful lot over time. That can't be said for Bryant Gumbel.
Right.
He's an angry black man for no particular reason. But as I said, I'm not black. I don't get that, so I don't understand. I can't really say for sure. I can say this. It's a double standard, and it has to stop.
And as I said, and you're alluding to it too, we don't know the man.
No.
So we don't know exactly what his story is. But let me put it to you this way. If it's a white guy who says things like this on an ongoing basis, do you care what his story is? Would people care what his story is? Or would they say, all right, I have some sympathy for what his childhood was, how his personality was informed by dysfunction, but we can't have this. Wouldn't you do that? Wouldn't that go only so far before you said, look, we've cut you enough slack. You need to stop saying stupid, racially motivated things in a public forum that are injurious to people.
He can make the argument, though, and not to defend him on this, but it appears as if there's a lot of NBA players who are feeling the same thing. And let's face it, the NBA is predominantly black. But it doesn't get away from the fact that you're bringing up something David Stern had nothing to do with. He's never been a plantation owner. And anything he does, in my opinion, is done for what he believes is the betterment of his league. End of story.
Gumbel also said that, well, he hinted pretty strongly that racism was at the root of David Stern's actions commissioner.
Yeah.
And
I don't know how else you read that.
And in this work stoppage. Well, he talks about David Stern ranting in the last week. I heard him once. It wasn't a rant. It was saber-rattling. It was calm and measured and intelligent. It was...
It was the way negotiations go.
It sounded like Gary Bettman, who was not accused of being a racist, but then again, I guess most people, most players in the NHL are white. But David Stern just said almost exactly the same things that Gary Bettman said during the lockout in the National Hockey League. And I'm not surprised for two reasons. One, that's how you negotiate. That's what you do. Mm-hmm. You say that the players are being misinformed. It's not racist. You're not saying they're stupid or that their union head is stupid and doesn't grasp it, just that they're being misinformed. Right from the Gary Bettman playbook, who I'm assuming took it from the David Stern playbook
when he was
in the NBA.
Absolutely.
So that's nonsense what Gumbel is talking about there, too. And let's not forget, again, this isn't the first time he's said something like this. That was just too ridiculous to really take seriously.
Yeah,
remember the Olympics. See, you can't consider these guys in the Winter Olympics amongst the best athletes in the world because there aren't that many black people who care about the Winter Olympics or partake in it.
Yeah.
Flip that again. I only ask people to flip that again. And if a white guy says, you can't take the Summer Olympics seriously because there are too many athletes who are black and not enough who are white, how would that have played?
Not well.
Not well. It's time for Bryant Gumbel, I think, to
go away.
Find some management classes. Well, see, I don't want to get caught up in that too much because I'd be a hypocrite. We talked about Don Cherry last week, and I defend his right to be on CBC, to say what he wants, and I defend your right to disagree with, but also just
click
away.
I
will stop short. I'm not going to call for Bryant Gumbel to be fired, but he damn well should be punished in some way by HBO or by somebody, economically at least, because of this.
You know, the sad fact is there are going to be some people who say good for Bryant Gumbel because HBO is going to come out a winner because of it. That's a sad reaction.
Dear occupants, y'all need to get it together. You've got some good points to make. You've got some ideas that need to be put forward. You've got voices that deserve to be heard, but you are scattered. You're not resonating with each other. And that means your voices are being scattered in the wind like so many autumn leaves. I mean, people waiting in line to buy the new iPhone are more organized than you guys. Occupy Toronto apparently is not affiliated with Occupy Bay Street. Fine, maybe there's something to be said for the organic sprouting of demonstrations and protests. It speaks to the groundswell of the cause nature of things. It worked in Egypt, but they had a point, a clear message. Get rid of Mubarak. Toronto's occupiers, as were New York, seem to be a disintegrated collection of causes and ideals, so no clear message other than, I guess, disaffection. I can't quite find the rhythm of this thing unless it's in the music at Young and Dundas, where a dance party broke out again last night, two nights in a row. That'll teach the one percenters. We'll turn Dundas Square into what looks like a flash mob promotion for the remake of Footloose in theaters now. Dancing, hanging out, smoking pot, occasionally showing up behind an amused reporter dressed as a werewolf holding a sign. It's all like an impromptu Burning Man festival, only that has way more organization and discipline. What do we want? We're not exactly sure. When do we want it? I'd say now, but now's not good. We're going to play a little hacky sack at Queen's Park, so a little later. The whole world is watching with a contorted, confused look on their faces.
Well, that may be true, but I'll tell you, there's something to this that I think is really interesting to watch. There's no question that there's no leadership. We're mad about everything. And that's, there's a certain element of truth to the fact that it isn't getting any traction for that very reason. However, the biggest word, the word you said there that I think has to be taken pretty seriously is disaffection. There's an awful lot of people who are really unhappy with the way things are. For instance, a lot of people who are in their 20s who bought into the whole ideal of go to school, work hard. When you get out, there'll be something there for you. And you know what? There isn't, because it's been taken or it's been moved offshore. Whatever the fact of the matter is, they're pissed. And you know what? They're right to be pissed. This is the first generation that isn't going to be as well off as the one before them. It's a problem, and it's going to get a lot worse. I do think at some point down the road, they'll come to some kind of agreement amongst themselves that there is a reason behind this more important than everything else. And when they get behind that idea, I think this is going to be an awful lot like the Arab summer. And it's going to go worldwide, and you're going to see a change in things. How big a change, I don't know, but I think something's coming.
I don't know. I think I saw more life in the Leaf power play over the weekend than in this thing. And when you talk about this generation being the first one that's not going to be better off than the previous generation, that story is yet to be told. I'm not positive of that. Things look bleak, but guess what? They have always looked bleak, and every new generation has something to be PO'd about, and they have been PO'd about. It's just that perhaps we haven't seen this kind of attempt at organization since the 60s, perhaps. I mean, I can't think of another time, at least not in North America, when we've seen this. But I don't know how they're going to be in the long run. Better off, worse off. I will suggest that there's a pretty good chance that they're going to be better off, but they're going through hard times right now, and they don't like it. They're young. They're immature. They can't handle it.
They've been told from the time they first got up, they first understood what mommy and daddy were saying to them, that you can do whatever you want. Well, there's no truth in that. They can't do whatever they want.
You're right.
Unless what they want is to sit around waiting for something to happen. They're real good at that.
Well, you're right. So whose fault is that? I have a little bit of sympathy here, I suppose. I mean, I was young and impatient. I'm older and
sure.
I'm still somewhat impatient. I can take things as they come to me a little better. It's the nature of youth, isn't it? I want it. I want it now. I got to have it. And coupled with a parenting style that changed, I think, from our parent style, which is you're special. Show up and you win. And that's all there is to it.
But here's the problem. You said, I want it. I want it now. That's all true, except the it isn't available. That's the problem.
Right. Well, and again, it comes back to organization and... They need Jay Baruchel. That's what they need.
Oh.
Have you seen the movie The Trotsky?
I did.
It's a terrific film about a kid in
Montreal.
He's a
weird guy. I can't take an hour and a half of watching him, though. He's just a strange duck.
He thinks he's the reincarnation of Trotsky and he is trying to organize his
it's
high
school. It's a
funny
movie,
It's
actually.
A very good movie. Yeah. And they need that. They need Jay Baruchel as the Trotsky to cotterpin them all together and do something. Or just figure out, Chantal Hébert, the columnist with the Toronto Star, who I think she did it again in a column. She, I believe that every room she walks into, she's the smartest person there. And she talks about this disaffection being channeled in the wrong direction. Because if you think about it, the people who are at Queen's Park and at Dundas Square and have things to complain about, they are involved in the demographic that does the least amount of voting in elections. And if they were somewhat motivated in the federal election. I do have to say Rick Mercer did a fine job with that. But if they came out in great numbers to have their collective voice heard, maybe Dalton McGuinty's got a majority. Maybe Andrea Horvath has more seats. Maybe Stephen Harper isn't in possession of his easy-to-please-myself majority. I think that's a very good point. Political organization is what's really necessary for this generation to have a salient say.
This is The Gist of It with Hayes and Landry.
So, Don, last week we got talking, much like the rest of the country, about Don Cherry and the issues he had with three enforcers, kind of throwing him under the bus. And I was of the opinion that he would not apologize. I was wrong. And you know what, Don? When you make a mistake, you got to come out. You got to say you did it wrong. I did it wrong.
You got to say, you know, you got to be a big man. Never think like that. And I've always been that. If I'm sorry, if I'm wrong, I got to say it. I got to see. The lawyers told me to, eh? I think that is pretty much how.
I'm sure the lawyers were involved. Absolutely.
I'm sure they were very much involved. But
it was heartfelt, didn't you think?
Grapes is not stupid either, all right? So if he got legal advice, and he does calm down, he doesn't need legal advice to say, I was wrong about something, I don't think, or at least to soften his stance. He will think about things after he spouts off a little bit. But I think definitely it was in his best interest to legally to do it. Somebody had asked me, do you think he'll apologize? I was like you. I said, no, I don't think so. It's not, he wouldn't want to do that. That would be very difficult for him to do.
Out of character.
And again, unless his lawyers say, you have to, or it's going to cost you a bunch of money. And then I was asked, do you think he'll quit? No way he'll ever quit. Even if he wants to, we've had personal conversations with before, and it can wear on the guy. It could wear on anybody sometimes.
He wears that. He likes it.
You can get what? Well, I don't agree with that.
I don't mean.
I think he can get pretty worn down by by harsh criticisms, and he was hit with the tsunami unlike any he's ever seen before.
I'm not suggesting that that was. I'm saying he likes being Don Cherry,
yes,
coach's corner. He wears that.
And for a guy like him, I think it's obvious to all that you don't quit anything. And if you get fired, okay, that's one thing. But you kept your stick on the ice and you kept driving to the net. And they said no more. That's the way, not just Don Cherry, but many people in his generation think. You don't quit anything ever. Not just his generation. Ours. There are a lot. It's a Canadian sensibility,
absolutely,
I think, isn't
very
it?
Very much so.
That you just don't. So I don't think there was any. I don't think we'll ever see Don Cherry quit. He'll have to be told no more by somebody. And then we'll see if the next guy wants to hire him. And if not, then he'll be somewhere.
Oh, I can't see Grapes walking away into that good night. That's not going to happen. I do think, I'll give him credit. There probably were lawyers involved with this. I'd go so far as to say 95% lawyers were involved in this. But you know what? Mm-hmm. He did it in a manner that that's believable. And he also, he taught you something there. Because he said, hey, when you're wrong, you got to admit you're wrong.
Yeah.
That takes a big man. I'll give him credit for that.
We need to talk about Aaron Asham at all. I mean, we could a little bit. It's been, you know, again.
Right, he did the same thing. Took
we
ownership.
Taped the podcast before this all happened. I know people have been talking about it a bit. And at first, you know, I was really ticked off by it. And I think I tweeted he should be forced to wear the letters ED on the end of his name for the rest of the season. But that was before I heard his apology at the end of the game. And then I thought, okay, that's pretty good. And then all the explanations that come after. It's not like he looked at the guy and went, all right, he's out cold and bleeding. Now I'm going to make fun of him.
Right.
He just skated away and started the adrenaline. I buy into that completely. Adrenaline can take you. You can do stupid things in the heat of the moment. And if you're a big enough guy to almost immediately, at the first chance, say, I'm an idiot.
Up. Yeah.
I'm pretty good with that. So I'm all right with his apology. I'm all right with the NHL saying, yeah, let's move on. If he does it again,
well,
then you go...
Yeah, I agree.
Clearly,
with that.
He doesn't believe in the words that.
I'll say this though. I'll say this. We've seen some rather unusual suspensions from Brendan Shanahan. Some calls that I thought were a bit much, and some where I thought, well, that could have been a suspension, and he didn't. This is one where, if he really wanted to make that a lesson to players, could have given him a game. The fact that he didn't, I think, is good for him. But there should have been some kind of warning. I would suggest a $2,500 fine or something.
Right.
Just to let them know, hey, look, we'll give you one here, but we noticed.
Almost symbolic in nature, but just a little
absolutely.
Bit more than
and,
that.
And, you know, eventually, if you keep doing stuff like this, and not just him, but anybody else, it'll start costing you games.
We're not hearing fewer voices when it comes to those who think it's turning into touch hockey. Have you noticed that?
Yeah.
There are many who really believe that, look, guys are turning away. And you've got some tough guys in the NHL complaining that people are turning into the boards so that their backs are facing out to try and goad people into penalties. And the NHL's got to do something about that. I don't think they do because, Bill, that's no different to me than trying to go around a defenseman and you're either going to or you're going to try and goad him into hooking you or tripping you. Or you try to goad guys into things all the time.
Of course, you want
NHL.
An edge. Absolutely.
So if this is the landscape of the National Hockey League now, and you're smart enough to go, all right, I'll turn my back to this guy, and if he wants to hit me, he's going to the box for 2 minutes, or if not, I'm going to get a little more room. Fill your boots. Fine. Good strategy.
Brooks Like from the Washington Capitals was saying, hey, look, we're men here. We can police this ourselves. Last time I heard that, it was the banks. Sticking with the NHL for a little bit, Don, I look at the Toronto Maple Leafs, our home team. They're 3-0-1. Now, it's true that they haven't played an awful lot of tough teams. The Canadiens, I guess, would be considered a good team, but everybody else is teams that didn't make the playoffs last year, and they're undefeated. Well, they did lose a game in overtime, but that I don't. They're still. They got a point out of it.
Really, so. You don't count. That's a defeat.
No, well, okay.
Are you that guy? Are you that guy that you know what? In the old days, it was just a tie and a point, and that's it.
That's
they
right.
Didn't lose.
That's right. They did lose. I'll give you that. Yeah. But I see it differently as a loss than a loss. But the point is, they're doing this without. I would say, and keep my fingers crossed as I say this. Their number one free agent signing, and that was Tim Connolly. 4.75, I believe, over 2 years. A guy with a...
Number one free agent signing by default because the guy they wanted was not available and went to New York, correct?
That and the fact that the two Richards, because Brad signed with the Rangers, Mike got traded someplace else, and so did Jeff Carter. So they missed out on all three of those guys, and they ended up with Connolly instead. And the thing with Connolly has always been, yeah, he's got some talent, but he's also, he's brittle. He's had, he lost a year to concussion. He seems to have the strain. He and Carlo Koliakovo, I'm sure, joined at the hip. The problem is, here we are, four games in. He hasn't been back, and there's some rumblings. He's got an upper body injury. No one knows. But for the first time yesterday, I heard someone suggest, you know what? Maybe it's a concussion. What do you think?
Well, that's a suggestion, right?
Oh, no one knows. They won't say anything.
Well, what I'd like to know is there any evidence to suggest that? Is there a video of a hit where he
happened in practice?
His head? Okay. Well, but aren't practices almost always on Leafs TV? Well, I don't. Don't maybe. They shoot like pretty much the whole thing?
They might.
Live shot. I think it was yesterday or the day before, I saw a live shot of Luke Shen bringing a bucket of pucks out. Luke Shen brings the pucks out for practice. Now, they went on to do other things. It's just kind of funny to me. And, you know, and they went on and did analysis and things and had a round table. It was fine, but it was just kind of funny to me. You're looking live at Luke Shen bringing pucks out to the practice facility.
Several are red.
Can you see that? Just one place right here on Leafs TV. What were we talking
about? Do you feel sorry for Tim Connolly, though?
Because I do.
He signs his contract. He's pretty excited about coming here. And of course, the question was, well, you know, he's got this injury history. And sure enough, he hasn't played.
I felt, to get back to, I guess, the point we were talking about, it was, could he have a concussion? Mm-hmm. Sure, he could have a concussion. He could also have lost a toe. Well, no, they said upper body.
He
might have a swollen elbow. He could have smoker's lung, for all I know. It's an upper body thing. But until I see some evidence of that, I would rather not speculate about that. But I felt sorry for Tim Connolly before that. I used to watch him play a little bit when he was with the Erie Otters, and thought he's a good kid, terrific player, and got into the NHL. And one of those guys that, you know, I was really rooting for and liked to watch play. So I felt really bad for him when he was with the Buffalo Sabres and could hardly get into the
league. Actually, I feel bad for him in the sense that you talked about his Erie Otters at the time. He made the Islanders as an 18-year-old, and in hindsight, he surely shouldn't have.
Yeah.
And I do believe that guys like that... you never know what they might have been had they stayed that one extra year in junior. It's a real problem for a lot of those guys, I think. As a matter of fact, they have another guy like that. Bailey is another one that, you know, he stuck as an 18-year-old, and he's plateaued. Probably a lot lower in terms of impact than they thought he would.
You know who I feel good for? You know, I feel badly for Tim Connolly. I feel good for Phil Kessel. I'm happy for him. I liked him with the Boston Bruins. I thought it was a good deal, a deal I would have made, that Brian Burke deal. And I know a lot of people, and it's going to be arguable for a while, not to suggest that he can keep this pace up.
No, he can't.
But he looks way better. I know
different
that
player.
You know, even fans who wanted to dump on him the way they did on Matt Sundin are happier with his two-way play.
That's right.
And I don't even care about that. I really don't with Phil Kessel. If he's putting 40 pucks plus in the net on a seasonal basis, I'm happy with him as long as he's not completely abdicating his defensive responsibilities. After all, what is being a general manager except throwing the pluses out there with the minuses and rearranging the pluses and minuses to make sure that you have a little more on the plus side and you can win a Stanley Cup? There is no team out there filled with 18 guys who are good in all three zones. You have to take some bad with some good with some people. And even if Phil Kessel's defense falls off, I'll be okay with him as long as he is doing what he's doing in the other team's end.
But you said it already. He can't possibly keep this pace up. The problem with Kessel, and apparently this was addressed to him by Ron Wilson and for all I know, Brian Burke and everybody else involved, was, look, what are you doing for us when you're not scoring? Because as a goal scorer, he's hot and cold. When he's hot, he's like he is right now. He's on fire. But he'll go through stretches where he won't score for 10, 12 games. And he's got to give you something else then. And I think the best thing we've seen out of him so far is he appears able to do that. And I think that's, to me, the most exciting thing about his start here is we are seeing a guy who's playing 200 feet. That's never been part of Phil Kessel's agenda. And if he keeps doing that, I think it will even further help the Leafs because there's a leadership aspect to that. You know, if you're trying to get guys to play a certain way and your number one scorer doesn't do it, that message resonates with everybody else. If he's doing it, then I got to do it too. And I think that's the biggest impact he's going to have.
All good points, but we got to go, all right? If you don't mind, let's take a pause right here because I understand Leafs TV has live coverage of the towels being laundered.
It's Don Landry and Bill Hayes, and you're getting The gist of it.
Let me go over the story for you, and then I want your reaction. Guy in Nova Scotia sees this old hockey stick hanging up on a barbershop wall. Says, hey, that thing's really old. Sure, looks like it's from, I don't know, early 1800s, probably somewhere in there. How much you want for it? The barber, I guess, says, you can have it for $1,000. And this guy's worried. Well, that's a lot of money, but the stick sang to him, if you will.
Yeah.
You know? And he took it home. And then he decided to get the thing dated. And an expert said, this might be from the 1830s. So he gets the stick for $1,000 from this elderly barber. If it dates to the 1830s, based on the sale of another stick, which was dated to the 1850s, this is worth a couple of million dollars. Because the article I'm reading in the Toronto Star, based on the sale of the famous 1850s Rutherford stick for more than $2.1 million. First of all, I didn't know Jimmy Rutherford was that old.
No, he doesn't look it.
$2.1 million that stick went for. If this one's from the 1830s, it's worth more. Barber wants more money, says, I think he owes me money. What do you think?
Well, two things. Firstly, if I bought that Rutherford stick, I'd be pretty ticked. Like, that's just, whoa. Yesterday was a great investment. Yeah. Yeah, today, right. Not so much.
I didn't think of it that way. Yeah. Maybe it's not so much that would be worth more than the Rutherford stick.
Mm-hmm.
Now that one's worth a lot.
Oh, yeah. It's not good. Secondly, look, I understand that, you know, this guy would like more money because he obviously didn't think it was worth as much. So my personal view is, when he asked for $1,000, he was, in his own way, gouging. I think of Storage Wars, for instance. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that it's the show where people are bidding on whatever might be in some storage bin somewhere, and they're hoping that it might be worth something.
Right,
and
right.
But they never know, and it could be or may not be. And they were both playing that game. The barber lost. But on the other hand, he got $1,000
for something. Elderly barber, been cutting hair his whole life.
Yeah, yeah, whatever.
Thinking, hey, yeah, I can sell this stick for $1,000, give the money to my grandchild towards their tuition, something like that.
Your heart is as hard as the galvanized
rubber that they make pucks from.
If he thought it was worth anything like that, he had the opportunity himself to take it to someone and date it, and he never thought to do so. So, had this guy not come along and given him the $1,000, that stick would still be in
SOL.
His barbershop.
So you're saying, SOL, that's it. If it's me and I get $2 million for that stick,
you're gonna
I'm
give
giving
up.
That guy, I don't know if I'm giving him half.
I know you're not.
Well, I don't want to go overboard.
No.
I mean, I'm not a softy here, but, not completely anyway. I think I'd want to make him a little bit happier. Optically, the elderly barber, you stole his stick for $1,000 and now you're getting $2 million for it.
Whoa.
And you don't want to give him any money?
I don't think you stole it at all. I think you paid a pretty hefty premium at the time and you lucked out because it seems to be worth more.
I might go so far as to say that Earl McCrae was one of my all-time favorite columnists. If not number one, certainly
in close.
Two or three.
Yep.
Unfortunately, we lost Earl McCrae on the weekend. He passed away after a heart attack at the age of 69. I have some personal experience with him from years ago, but I liked him before that. I clearly remember Earl McCrae being on CBC Television Sports one night. Do you recall this? This is
what
infamous.
Was the incident?
He wanted Wayne Gretzky to retire from hockey immediately. It was at the zenith of Gretzky's career. We can't afford to have Gretzky out there risking injury or even death. We need to retire him right now and put him out to stud like Northern Dancer. Wayne Gretzky would be put up in a home of his choosing, and all the comely lasses of Canada would be brought to him to be serviced. I think he got fired for that. He at least was one of those things that had people up and up, because this is about 1982 or 83 or
right.
Something like that.
Yeah, he was always that way.
Oh, yeah. A great contrarian, whether in print, on radio, or on television.
Yeah.
Very good at getting at you, and no matter what you said, saying, are you kidding me? Here's why you're wrong. And he could craft it instantly. Wonderful talent.
I remember listening to him before I got into radio, I think, or if not, it was certainly shortly thereafter, and going, wow, how could you come from there? because he always came from there. Yeah. He wasn't a mainstream guy. If you're talking about there being, say, Mars and the rest of us being Earth,
yeah,
he was a Martian.
Oh, yeah.
But the thing was, he got a reaction. And he also made you think. One of the things I liked about him was that he wasn't always buying everybody's baloney. And I think that's exactly how he put it.
Yeah.
He was also a guy that I didn't know him near as well as you did. But I did get a
chance. I didn't know him really well. I want to make that clear. I did work with him a little bit back in the 80s. And I'll tell you another story about that in a second.
I met him a couple of times. And nicest guy you'd ever want to meet. He really was. But with a sense of humor that was really different. And yeah. That's something I appreciate about a guy like him.
Yeah.
You know, I wish that I could think more outside the box. I mean, I try to, and occasionally I succeed. He lived outside the box.
He did.
And I really appreciated that about
a
him.
A real rapscallion. Again, in person, as you say, a gentleman, soft-spoken, mm-hmm. warm-hearted, seemed genuinely interested in what's going on with you that day. What have you got to say? And that goes right to the day of his death. He was apparently sent to get a sensitive set of quotes from somebody who was a relative of someone who had died. And then that guy wrote a column about him, about meeting him on that final day. I guess it was Saturday. And just glowed about this guy who didn't really know who he was, just that he knew it was Earl, and he was polite, asked questions, and then handed him his card at the end and went, Earl McRae. So that was one side of him. The other side, the rapscallion, he invented a fictional sport named Scribner
mm-hmm.
and often mm-hmm. put it in columns or on the air.
Yeah.
And even had a great Canadian legend who how could it be that, I think his name was Nigel Fremp. How can he not be in the Sports Hall of Fame in Canada? And he would make up stats. He's a world leader in this and that in Scribner, and it's a travesty. And some people believed it, and he would go on. Elvis is alive and living in Tweed, Ontario.
Famous for that.
I am positive Elvis is alive and living in Tweed, Ontario. And then on the other side of it, again, in 88, when I got to know him a little bit, he would do a character on the air, an English gentleman reading sports scores and couldn't get him right. He would say, Montreal beat St. Louis 4-3, you know, things like that. And then he wrote a column about Ben Johnson.
I remember that.
Do you? Yeah. Oh, he basically said, Ben, you make me puke. It's funny how that word has come back. And he wrote a column about Ben made his kids cry, and he just roasted him. This is like a day or two after Johnson loses the gold medal. And that was controversial.
Well,
people called for his firing. And
the other thing about that, though, was he not the first to say, hey, it's very funny how 2 days ago Ben was Canadian, now he's Jamaican.
I think you're right. He did point that out too. Earl McRae, one of the true treasures, I believe, in media across, again, television, radio, but particularly in print. I'm going to miss you.
This is The Gist of It with Hayes and Landry.
Don, it's interesting. One of the things about Twitter that I find pretty interesting is the trending aspect of it. You go to Yahoo, you see what, you know, at any given point, the top 10 things that are at that point trending on Twitter. And I don't know about you, but I have a reaction to every time I see a name on there. Do you have a reaction that's the same? Or what is your reaction?
Yeah, I think I do. Every time I see somebody's name on there, I think, oh, no, did they pass away?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And in some instances, you kind of go, well, you know, like Shia LaBeouf, probably not, you know.
Well, I didn't know what to expect when he hit the trend.
Probably not good, though, right?
No, it's not.
And that's the other thing, because how often do you see someone trending for a good reason?
Right, right, right.
It's always, oh, boy, one thing I don't want to be is trended.
You're right. It seems to be that there's an attachment. Not always. I mean, Anthony Calvillo trended as he was setting.
Okay.
You know, I wonder. I mean, because that is my my belief, too. It's my understanding of it. But maybe if we did some study on who's trending.
That it would be different?
I wonder if we would find that it might be a little bit more even. There are also a lot of things that trend on Twitter simply because people say, hey, let's get this trending or let's get this person trending. But usually it's like, was Shia LaBeouf? I mean, he's trending because there's a story that, I mean, if you want to ask the question, where's LaBeouf? He's in a gutter outside a Vancouver bar after being wailed on by a shirtless guy, apparently. There's some video.
It's not good.
It might not be him. And then there's another story. See, it happens. You know, you get one story, then there's another one. Someone on his film set is saying, yeah, he flipped his lid about something else. I don't know if any of that's true. In the video I saw, I couldn't tell if it was Shia LaBeouf. You found a
one
capture.
Picture sure looks like
yeah
him.
You found a single screen capture and yeah. It sure looked like him and there are different stories. We'll get to the bottom of it at some point, but it can be funny. I mean, he's okay. And if he did get beaten up by a shirtless guy, I mean, who just ran down the street, by the way, and you've got people saying, what was it? One tweet was police have narrowed down the list of suspects to everyone who saw Transformers 3.
On that note, by the way, Jason Statham is going to do Transformers 4, which is another way of saying, I want to retire.
Is it 4 or 5? What are we up to? I don't know if I got the right numbers on that. But at any rate, Shia LaBeouf, shame on you. Street fighting in Vancouver during the regular season? No. You wait until the Canucks lose the final.
Well, it's hard to believe we've come to the end of another podcast. Hey, if you said finally, shame on you. We'll be back with another show next week when we'll talk about Halloween tricks and treats. Great costumes we've seen and worn, and that doesn't include the red rubber ball in the mouth. I swear I thought that was an art picture. For Don Landry, I'm Bill Hayes, and that's The Gist of It.
The Gist of It is available every Wednesday afternoon through iTunes or at donlandry.com.